We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am, as always, joined by my colleague, Kurt Hoag, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're talking about a real bad week. Ugly week of Brewers baseball. They go 2-5, land softly with a win on Sunday in St. Louis, but they lose both series this week in San Francisco and in the Lou, and a lot of that had to do with bad defense, just horrendous defense from a team that is ostensibly one of the better defensive teams in the league. So we have to talk about that. It was a crazy week for Wisconsin sports. The Bucks are playing in the playoffs. The NFL draft took place in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I guess the Milwaukee Brewers were playing too. But most importantly, most important thing that happened this week is that your boy, Kurt Hoag, turned 30 years old. Kurt Hoag.
What?
Right
as
now,
we record,
I'm turning 30 as we speak.
It's like a metamorphosis, like a butterfly coming out of a chrysalis. That's you right now, because today, as we record, is your 30th birthday.
That is right, folks. I've made 30 full trips around the moon. No, not the moon. The sun. Dear God. Can we start this over?
Why would we do that? It's fine to make celestial confusions. That's totally fine.
It's not my fault. Moose, my dog, is literally right here.
Yeah. Right, what here. Up, Moose? Celebrating your birthday.
No,
I love that.
He's literally in my personal space. I don't know why. But he's like breathing all hard. I'm going to try to be quiet, Moose. Did you hear that?
No. Did he burp? I did not hear that.
Well, maybe the listeners will pick up on it, but he absolutely just belched. It's my birthday. It's my birthday. I didn't watch much baseball this weekend. So I'm going to say things. I'm just going to riff. I didn't watch baseball.
I was at the NFL draft, Kurt, for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
I thought you were going to say that was the most important thing that happened this week, because it was something that cool for you. And obviously like that.
Well, nothing is
more
two.
Important. Nothing is important. Nothing is more important to you than awesome things happening to you in your job.
Well, I would say that for the podcast purposes, it's awesome things that happen to either one of us. I am generous enough to allow for that. And so therefore your milestone birthday and as celebrated by your dog in your space, that's a big deal for this podcast. That's huge news for this podcast. And yes, me spending several days in Green Bay, taking in a once in a lifetime event, also huge news for this podcast. What a great time to be alive for this podcast. It's too bad the Brewers went ahead and went 2-5 this week. Don't you think?
They were terrible. But more importantly for you, how was the draft?
I had a great time.
It was possibly in the plans for me to go up Friday. Ultimately, I got in literally in my bed at 3 a.m. on Friday morning. And so that just threw a bit of a wrinkle into that. But it was like, how was the vibe? It was good. It was good. It was good vibes.
It was truly great. Yeah, I really enjoyed it as much as, you know, it was busy. I was busy the whole time. Really, really rocked. My step count was huge the last few days. My watch thinks I'm a much better person than I am by suggesting what I should be getting for steps today and yesterday and probably over the next several days. The disappointment will slowly sink in and it'll realize I'm not that person. But I do think it was a really cool event. I mean, I really think and you could actually read my takeaways at jsonline.com, where I sort of document my 2 days.
Plug.
We're so good at this. Oh, speaking of which, Kurt, at the end of our conversation, I have an interview with another member of the Milwaukee Brewers. It's Quinn Priester. He's the starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. His starts this week were kind of like all the Brewers this week. But but he's an interesting addition. We could talk a little bit about him, I guess. I'm not sure if he'll come up as we talk about the starting rotation. There are things in the starting rotation we want to discuss. But yes, the draft, great. I think it went off without a hitch is crazy to say, because there were hundreds of thousands of people. I'm sure there were plenty of hitches, but it seemed like things went very, very well. They exceeded a lot of expectations. The Packers drafted a wide receiver. We are so back. So good times. Really cool to see that in Wisconsin. And yeah, it was fine. It was a good time. Kurt,
I'm happy for you. I just wanted to say that I'm happy for you. I'm happy you had a good time working. It's your new grown-up state track is what I got from this.
Sure. Absolutely. Oh yeah. I used to love covering state track, and this is the grown-up version. My goodness. Kurt, of course, really, truly, the biggest thing that happened this week is that Craig Yoho joined the Milwaukee Brewers.
That's right.
We can't talk about that. Yeah. That happened on Monday. Monday was so long ago, Kurt. Monday is eons and eons ago. You spent a plane ride to San Francisco trying to confirm that Craig Yoho was in fact.
Yes. Take us on that flight. Wi-Fi was bad. The Wi-Fi was functional. It wasn't great. A lot of texts were sent out. They started filing in like sporadically. So it was made for a couple of disjointed conversations. But anyway, yeah, I mean, we found out that Craig Yoho was probably getting called up, and then literally on our drive over to the hotel is when I was trying to send the tweet out, and it took like 2 minutes for it to send. And
oh my goodness,
literally as it is finishing the upload, Adam McAlvey sitting next to me goes, "Oh, look, what John Heyman said," and then mine goes, and I'm like, "Oh, look what I did." So it was kind of fun. But we were obviously talking about this for weeks, so it was awesome to be there for his debut. Just not a great story, as everyone knows, and a pretty decent first week. He didn't dominate big league hitters by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know if anyone expected that necessarily right off the bat. Like, he'll still get some lower leverage work to begin, but certainly didn't seem overmatched at the start of his time in the big leagues. The stuff plays. So Craig Yoho in the big leagues, JR. I'm glad that we let off with that, because it was 7 days ago by the time this comes out. So it sort of feels like not a big story anymore, but
right.
Pretty cool. And pretty cool for you personally.
For us.
The podcast personally. This is
big. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got to be good now. That's the other part of it. Like, if he had come up and just gotten obliterated by the opponents, there would be some egg. There'd be, I have plenty of egg on my face already. People are like, "Why did you say Joey Ortiz would be good? Why did you say Garrett Mitchell would be good?" And to that, I say, JR, I don't know. I'm an idiot. I am stupid.
Well, only in April. Early season stupidity.
Yeah.
3 2/3 innings for Craig Yoho this week. He allowed one run. It was not his fault. The Brewers defense could have done him a little bit better there. It was an earned run.
He got squeezed, too.
Got squeezed.
The first outing, he was not getting calls.
He did get 3 strikeouts in his 3 outings, so... yeah, we will see. We will see him progress. People are going to like him. He's going to succeed. He will be very good for that bullpen. And we'll talk about the roster move that they ultimately had to make. And that's sending Brian Hudson down when they activated Tobias Myers on Thursday. We'll talk about that. But the defense piece is really what I wanted to talk about, Kurt, because you and I, we've said this before, defense doesn't slump. And as we look back at the 2024 Brewers, for example, that's a reason why this team was really, really good. Why they won 93 games, because they never lost 4 in a row, not one time. They have done that twice now this year, and it's largely because of their defense. They lose 4 games by 2 runs or less, 3 of those, 3 in a row, that are 1-run losses, and you can point to a defensive play every time. This team is not a juggernaut offensively. They have like 2 extra base hits a game over the last 10 games. Like, that's, you know, they'll probably be better than that, but that's gonna happen to them. They have to be very, very elite on defense. Right now, I don't think they have a quality defensive third base. They have quality options defense at third, but not great. Their second baseman, Bryce Terang.
Vinny Capra is a quality defensive third baseman. There, I had got it out. Now we'll get to the rest of that later.
Yes.
But I had to say that. Okay, continue.
Vinny Capra has 3 hits and 45 at-bats. Joey Ortiz having a great defensive year. No shade whatsoever. He's also one of the worst offensive players in the big leagues right now. Bryce Terang, if defense doesn't slump, I really hope that I hope we're wrong about that, because Bryce Terang seems to be in a huge defensive slump. He is just not the same player. He's committed several errors, some of them because Rhys Hoskins hasn't caught the ball. So we know Rhys Hoskins defensively is always going to struggle a little bit. He's actually hitting the ball quite well, so that's nice, but defensively it's not there. The outfield defense has been so bad. Sal Frelick got benched for missing a cutoff man. Christian Yelich straight up dropped the baseball that was hit right to him that allowed the go-ahead and subsequent winning run to score on Thursday. It just isn't right, man. And so I guess ultimately the question is, were we wrong about this team being a great defensive team? Is it possible that these guys actually aren't as good defensively? I can't imagine that they're this bad, but something's up, Kurt. It's like a team-wide something going wrong with their D.
I mean, there's a team-wide something going on, and that's maybe the concern, is that we are not used to seeing obviously they didn't lose 4 games at all in a row last year, but they just look really disjointed. Really, really, really disjointed. It's kind of bewildering to experience. And you're right, the outfield defense, I mean, I'm not concerned about Bryce Terang's defense yet, but I'm like a couple more weeks of this away from being concerned about it, because you're right, it's been befuddling, not what we're used to seeing. But the outfield defense this week, if you think about it, all four of their main outfielders had just a terrible play. Christian Yelich dropped a fly ball. Garrett Mitchell, I don't know if you probably weren't even up for this. Some people were probably asleep.
Probably
it was on Yoho's debut. The run that scored had no business scoring. It was like medium to shallow depth fly to center with one out. And I think it was Lamont Wade running, so not a super fast runner. And Garrett Mitchell just like didn't get a grip of the ball, took forever on the exchange, was flat-footed, and then made a bad throw. So that was bad. Jackson Churio had a couple of bad throws home. One of them was terrible. And then Sal Frelick misplayed a couple balls in San Francisco and then obviously got benched for overthrowing the cutoff man. So, and that you could go around the rest of the defense. Interestingly enough, William Contreras has been like gold glove defense through a month. His framing has been pretty good and his throwing has been like the best in the league. So
yeah,
that is the one positive here, but I don't know what to make. Like, normally when a defense plays this bad for an entire week, it's not a good defense, but obviously I think we do have to give some benefit of the doubt to some of their guys. Like Terang will give it to Ortiz, has been generally okay, I think, right? Like I said, I didn't watch a ton this weekend, but so maybe
I would argue he's been quite good.
Okay,
I would say he's been quite good. It's funny, like every player is almost half a player at this point. Frelick and Terang, the gold glovers, have not been great defensively, but are among the better offensive players. Joey Ortiz is the opposite. Rhys Hoskins, you know, he's
all
good,
offense.
bad glove. Right. There isn't one player right now. William Contreras has been okay hitting. He had
OPS is at like 700. Certainly he's not been
right
all offense. He's been mostly all defense, frankly.
Yeah, I feel that's like that's true of every single player. It's crazy.
Good point. That's a very, very good point. Except maybe Isaac Collins. Congrats.
Isaac Collins. Has been solid. Has certainly not put himself in the conversation.
The only exception. Paramore.
I'm sorry. I'm extremely old. I listen to 90s music.
The Paramore concert a couple years ago was so good.
Really?
A good show. Yeah, such a good show.
I've got a couple concerts coming up. We're going to see Ben Folds with the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra this weekend.
Oh,
pretty pumped about that.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah.
Yep, that's exciting. Week after that is Jimmy Eat World. I very seldom miss a Jimmy Eat World show in Wisconsin.
I couldn't care less, but I'm happy for you once again.
Of course, you should be. That's right.
Yeah.
It's big concert time for me. I'm very excited. Nothing's in concert for the Brewers. It's either or, unless you're Isaac Collins. And that's super, super weird. Now, if you watch, as I did, these games on condensed games because we were watching the NFL draft or turning 30 or whatever, you'll notice a trend. the Brewers pitchers were getting a lot of light contact. I don't know what the advanced stats say, but we're talking about, you know, duck snorts into the outfield, soft ground balls, sometimes harder ground balls, but like certainly quickly on the ground. And sometimes they're going to find green grass. That's just how it's going to go. But for the most part, the starting pitchers are doing their job, right? They are getting the contact that the Brewers defense is supposed to turn into outs. And right. Again, not every play is going to go that way, but like,
it should.
If you look back, yes. I mean, if you look back in total, you can actually feel good about these games. If you think about it that way, they lost all one run games in games where they did not play their best. They are supposed to be better than that defensively. So maybe this is the blip on the radar. Maybe they really are a better team than we think 2-5 suggests in this particular week. But it is just disheartening because they just don't have that margin. They didn't allow games to slip away last year. They won all these close games. What are they like? 3-7, I think, in games decided by one or two runs this year. They have 4 saves all year long, and one of them was Tyler Alexander going 3 innings. Like, they just haven't played like that, and that's just fascinating to me. That's just a really interesting setup for them.
It's the opposite of what we're used to seeing, right? Brewers win all the close games, and yeah, it is difficult to decide on April 27th, my birthday, if they're not winning close games because there's something inherently different about this team, or if they're not winning close games because it is a blip on the radar. I guess we'll continue to find out. My concern, JR, is so something does feel a little disjointed about the Brewers, but more so the Cubs. I think the Cubs are good. Mm. I think the Cubs are a good baseball team with a very good offense. We'll see how the pitching ends up holding together, but it's not like they got injuries, but it's not like they're throwing garbage at the wind. Apparently they've reinvigorated Colin Ray, who the Brewers are already reinvigorated. So that's got to feel great in your 30s. I'm told I'll find out.
You'll find out
if I'll be equally reinvigorated. But yeah, I think the Cubs are good.
They did lose Justin Steele for the year with a major injury, but they have that depth that I think the Brewers like to think they have in terms of being able to overcome that. It's exactly playing out as, you know, I think people maybe like me would have predicted before the year. Now, 1 month does not a season make. We all know this. It could very well go. They've had losing months in the context of great seasons before there, and they are only one game below 500. It could be so much worse. But the Cubs look like a team that is very good. And you look back at their season last year and all those close losses, it's like, okay, regression really is coming for them in a good way in their point of view. And they are a little bit better. And Kyle Tucker rules, like really rules. So they have the best player in the division. They just have the best overall team. They're just going to be hard to catch. And the Brewers are going to be hard pressed to be a wild card team. Now, if they win 93 games like they did last year, they will not be hard pressed to be a wild card team. They will be a wild card team. I just don't know if I see that in them. And certainly the first month has not persuaded me otherwise. I still think it is wild to me that there is that hole on the infield that they could have addressed and didn't. Maybe they couldn't have, but they didn't address it. And they are left short, not even just in terms of difference makers, but in terms of bodies. Like, they just don't have a guy to play third base. Like, Caleb Durbin is an inelegant fit, and he's fine. And hit his first home run this week. I think he's probably the best of what they got for sure. But they don't have somebody at like AAA who's going to play third base. You know, that guy isn't walking through the door unless they acquire him somehow in April. Maybe a Willy Adames, you know, trade to 2020, you know, five version is what they ultimately need here, because they really could use something there. But they just don't look like they're a full team right now. They just aren't clicking on all cylinders. They do, though, Kurt, have a couple pitchers back that they didn't have at the beginning of the year. Jose Quintana once again continued to do good things. They won again with him on the mound on Sunday. So Quintana's their good luck charm at this point, which I feel like should be the case. He is so good when the Brewers are involved in the game. But then Tobias Myers, like I mentioned, did come back. Now, the corresponding move was to send down Brian Hudson. We've speculated that could be the case. So Hudson back to AAA, as with Craig Yoho kind of being here permanently, I would think at this point. We could talk about that. I thought Myers looked really good. He did look good in his last rehab start, exceptional his last rehab start, and I thought looked fine. Looks like Tobias. What is this rotation at full strength? Like, let's say Brandon Woodruff is good. He had a good rehab start this week. He comes back. I don't know who the best five are. Like, Chad Patrick and Quinn Priester are so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
They're quality, but they can't go deep into games, and that taxes the bullpen. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it looks like. What do you think?
Let's tier this. Well, first off, okay. Well, now we'll get into a little bit of tiers. The tiers
trust tree for the starting rotation.
Trust tree, yes. The trust tree, as someone said, the trust tree is thinning. I believe someone posted that on us over on Blue Sky. Yeah,
it's got Emerald Ash Borer. Emerald Ash Borer is in the trust tree.
It's like October 22nd for the trust tree. Not what you want to see.
No, leaves are
still got a couple of leaves on there, and they look like Nick Mears.
It looks like my hairline, which is, you know, quite
hey,
not
well,
there.
Speaking of that, I got grays coming in, brother. It's happening. You're 30. It's been happening for years. Yeah, I have a kid, whatever. So it's Freddy Peralta at the top. Numero uno, Freddy Peralta. Number two, Jose Quintana. I am at a point of, and I've been at the point of wondering, how long can he continue to get away with it? But also, his FIP is 333. So sure, he's outperforming it, and the ERA in the ones is not gonna, we all know it's not gonna last. There's gonna be a blow up or something in there where some contact falls in the wrong area. Like this is more than best case Jose Quintana through four starts. I think we're getting this is frankly what the Brewers deserve in the Jose Quintana's for four first starts is like that's every true. Batted ball with runners on going right to an infielder who makes the play.
It's like so frustrating, but so just true. The
case. He has gotten a few more whiffs the last couple starts, which has been interesting. But of course, the Brewers won two games this week, and guess who started them both? Jose Quintana, very fitting.
He is their Wade Miley, the new age Wade Miley. Same age as the old guy.
Just go out there, throw five and a third, and like they'll hit it to someone. I don't know how, but they will. That's going to come back down to earth, but like even if you have the ERA matches the FIP, that's a really, really good starter. Chad Patrick, 4.12 FIP, not quite as good, but that's still a pretty dang good number, frankly, for a back-end starter. But the ERA is 245. Like, that's got to come back down to earth. He's stranding 91% of runners that reach base. We know what's going to happen there. Quinn Priester's, I guess it says, started to regress. 3.79 ERA, 4.24 FIP. So if we're tiering, I'm not sure where I put Brandon Woodruff. I think him and Tobias Myers are certainly a step above Chad Patrick, like maybe a half step. I feel really good when Chad Patrick's on the mound for some reason. I think he's got really good pitchability and the stuff works. So we'll go Quintana and then Tobias Myers, Brandon Woodruff in that next tier. And then Chad Patrick, half step, and then maybe full step down Quinn Priester. And you know who I'm going to put in that same tier as Quinn Priester?
Kurt, I want this. Bring it home for me. Do it.
Les Mis.
Look down. Look to the triple A. All right. I shouldn't have freestyled that. Extremely terrible move by me. Les Mis. No, Jacob Mizorowski. Yeah, shove.
I'm not going to be able to recover from that. I had analysis and now my takes are gone. They've been buried. Jacob Mizorowski looks really good, JR.
Let's go.
Really good. I don't give a crap about the velocity. I do give a crap about the changeup. I do give a crap about everything being in and around the zone.
Yeah.
We talked maybe earlier this at some point about how the mechanics look more fluid. The mechanics look more fluid. It just looks right. The ball is not being sprayed. Like there's just not as much spraying. We're used to it. You know, he'd get like a 1-1 fastball and just misses by 2 feet. And then the next one misses by a foot in the other direction. We're just not seeing that. He looks stronger. It looks like it's frankly supposed to. I think he's walked one in his last two starts. Three in his last four starts, I think. It is probably exactly what you want to see. I don't think the Brewers should call him up yet. I want to see more of this. And I want him to come to the big leagues feeling like he is a big leaguer, like he is dominant. Because I don't always get the sense from that sense from him on the mound, especially watching him in person and talking to him. Like, you want to see that. I sense that from Craig Yoho. I usually sense that from Logan Henderson. I sense that from Chad Patrick. It's not always there for Miz. And I want to see him do this for 2, 3, 4 more starts. And obviously, like, they don't have a hole for him right now. You could probably very easily argue that you could just replace Quinn Priester with him right now and be just as fine, if not better, over the next 4 or 5 starts. But nevertheless, that's probably not going to happen. And that's okay. Probably not going to call for him to come up now. But it could, like, I think he could do it right now. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, I don't think they even trade for Quinn Priester if they think Mizorowski's on the doorstep here. Even if they think Mizorowski's right. ready by June 1st. So I would expect a later summer call-up, but it's coming. I mean, he's going to be there. And it also hinges on the health, right? Like, I mean, Nestor Cortez was moved to the 60-day injured list as part of the machinations of the week to get Craig Yoho onto the 40-man roster in the first place. So he's out until, what is that, the end of June? I mean, that's... And who knows if he's going to be healthy at that point, you know? So they're still hurting, and it's not evident who's going to be available. But I mean, it sure is getting to the point where we can start clamoring to see that guy. But I agree with you. It's not there yet.
He should spend more time down there. Like, you want him to make 5, 6 of these starts where he's forcing his way up. That's sort of the situation they're in with Miz, and it sure looks like he's trying to. It doesn't really impact the big league club right now, but this is probably the most optimistic I have been about him as a starter since maybe like when he first came up to the Timber Rattlers in Wisconsin. Even then, it was still like I was very skeptical about it, but I don't know if you've hung on to this string of belief that Mizorowski could start. This is a good time for you. Let's see if he can keep doing it, because 3 starts doesn't mean his control is fixed.
No, that's true. Joey Ortiz, let's go to the offense for a little bit. He is having a terrible year. Just really worst case scenario.
It's bad.
It's bad. And I'm curious what you think about it. Like, how much of this is just slump? How much is, you know, things have gotten, you know, regressed or whatever, gotten worse for him. You know, they have him bunting every once in a while. He's also, I think, maybe one of the worst bunters on the team. That's just very anecdotal. But the fact that Pat Murphy keeps asking him to bunt, even though the results are always bad, tells me that maybe he's just trying to do anything to get this guy going. And it is not happening. Now, as I said, I think defensively he's quite good. I think he has, if there's the cliche, don't bring it into the field with you, the slump with you. He has not done that. It's looked fine, but they've got to get him going because he's an easy out at the bottom of the order right now. And I know he's better than that. So what are you seeing with Joey Ortiz?
An entirely different profile than we saw for a lot of last year. Something's funky with the swing. The only way he's capable of getting hits right now is up the middle or opposite field, which isn't,
that's right.
Like, obviously that's an okay thing. Bryce Terang does that. It's just fine. But there's been no ability to pull the baseball. I think he has one base hit pull side this season. He's chasing way more than he did last year. He's not striking out a ton because he makes decent, like, he clips the ball, makes decent contact, but tons of pop-ups, tons of weak contact. The swing is just out of sorts. The chase is out of sorts. I think he's going to turn a corner. I do, but it did not take long for me to move past the Joey Ortiz quantum leap candidate thing. Even to, like, we'll see if Joey Ortiz leap or Joey Ortiz stay at the same level is in there, because yeah, like everything you talked about is correct. It has been a very, very, very rough start offensively. Doesn't seem to have a ton of confidence at the plate either. Like when he bunted in his first at bat on Thursday in San Francisco, runners on the corners, 2 outs, tries pushing a bunt. And also, as Pat Murphy said after the game, should have dropped it to third base because Matt Chapman was playing way back. He pushed it to first. So part of why the Brewers look disjointed, like that's one big piece, is Joey Ortiz has looked very disjointed at the plate. And but they need him to get going. He is their best option to get going at shortstop. He is still a very talented player on both ends. He has tools in there. So they'll give him some runway, no doubt. I know some people are frustrated about that. I don't. The other side of the infield position, though, JR, we don't need any more runway.
No. It's time for Vinny Capra to go. Like, he just he's overmatched, or and defensively he's not enough of a player, you know, an upgrade. Whether you take his versatility, he is. But you could take the versatility into account, but it's not enough to say, well, keep him on the big league roster. If you drop him, and maybe he catches on somewhere else and does well, but like, you're not missing out. The problem, though, Kurt, is Andre Monasterio is the only guy who's going to step into that role.
Fine. Of course.
That is fine. But we've watched the standard fall so far where you know, Andre Monasterio is like the upgrade. Like, Monasterio is having actually a really nice run at AAA, but can they really just not do better? And the answer is no, they can't. It's probably time to see Monasterio. I think Caleb Durbin, go ahead.
Like, Andre Monasterio, I have, at his worst, I have seen him hit okay. Not well, yes, but okay.
He could put a ball in a corner, maybe.
Yes, he has you have a general idea of what he, not saying you don't have, like, know what Vinny Capra is trying to do, but you have a sense of what Monasterio is trying to do. He has a way of getting on base. He takes his walks. He's a pretty good base runner. The defense, I'm not like, I don't know. I'm in between on the defense because I've seen both sides of it, so I'm not sure which one is real with him. So maybe that's part of it too. But like, also, I think he is a capable defender for that role, especially now that Caleb Durbin looks like he's probably going to hit decent enough to make the glove playable. And that reduces the need for Monasterio to play a ton. But like, I don't know, when Joey Ortiz needs a day off and you have to play Vinny Capra, like, that's not good. That's not good. When you decide to bench Caleb Durbin, and that means that Capra is the guy that comes up as the go-ahead run in the seventh inning with two outs, that's not good. It's just tough. It's tough. That role is difficult. But it's also difficult to see a guy go, what, 0 for 28, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
And
we're putting Craig Counsell's 45 straight hitless at bats on notice at this point.
I know that you lose. You know, well, Vinny Capra, I don't know if he's been outrighted before. I would guess not, just off the top of my head. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but you would keep him in the system most likely, unless someone claims him, which probably not going to happen. And if you do, I think you live with that after the guy goes over 28. So it's just been tough because every time he's come up, like, this isn't like a regular hitter going over 28 and scalding some balls right at people. It's just not competitive at bats, frankly. So Andre Monasterio can give you that. I think he's a better player. Was not a better player this spring, but I'm tattooing it right here. Spring training doesn't matter. Please read my story still.
He is 3 for 41 this season, 45 plate appearances. He has walked twice. He has a 283 OPS. Two of those hits of those three came in the first two games of the season, including, of course, that home run, which was fun. It's been real rough, and should have signed a third baseman. I mean, I keep coming back to that. I don't even mean like a high end free agent. You know, there weren't any high end free agents.
You mean Brendan Rodgers?
I do. A guy and who is probably not that great.
You are absolutely right. Brendan Rodgers is going to give you like 0.5 WAR this year.
100%.
You could take it because he can spell Joey Ortiz some days. He can spell Bryce Terang some days. He can spell Caleb Durbin some days. They don't have that guy.
It is astounding to me that they did not bring in somebody at that position. And now they just straight up need a dude to do anything. Caleb Durbin is okay. He'll be okay. He, like I said, hit his first home run this week on Monday. So we'll see. But they are short on people. Okay.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. I just checked in on Oliver Dunn's minor league stats.
How are they?
437 OPS so far in the minor leagues.
Well, we are talking about what, a week? Like, it's been
really, yeah, it's eight games. But he has 13 strikeouts in those 8 games.
Oh no.
And Oliver one died. Extra base hit. So I'm going to read something into that. I'm going to read a little something into that.
I had a friend who went to watch the Nashville Sounds, actually got on the field for one of the promotions for their Racing Sausage knockoff. Shout out to Tom. He informed me that Dunn almost made a really bad defensive play right in front of him. I don't know what that means, but you know, the
shout out to Tom.
Shout out to Tom. It's getting frustrating with Oliver Dunn. He's better than this. Garrett Mitchell got hurt this week. He pulled up with an oblique issue. Daz Cameron, guy we briefly talked about last week, is suddenly a big leaguer. He is on the team as the last outfielder. Shouts to Daz Cameron, son of Mike Cameron, third Brewer father-son combo to play for the Brewers. That is cool. I think it is cool. I hope he gets some chances because he was just pounding home runs at AAA. Now he has... he's had success at AAA before and it has not translated. So we'll see. Garrett Mitchell going on the IL, always concerning because his injuries are not ever short-term things. Not, I shouldn't say ever, but this is a recurring issue with him. He has been healthy for a long stretch at this point. You know, he missed the first half of last season, then came through and played regularly throughout the second half. He obviously homered in the playoffs and he had started out looking good spring, or at least a healthy spring. And, I was starting to forget about the injury issues and maybe this is just a blip on the radar, but an oblique is one of those things that lingers, and I would be a little worried here for Garrett Mitchell, who has also been struggling quite a bit this season. Your thoughts on the team losing Garrett Mitchell and what that changes, if anything, for that outfield picture?
So I'm going to equate this to last year when the Brewers were playing in Miami. This was maybe May, maybe June. And if you remember, Joe Ross exited his start early. And it yes. was, oh, and another injury to the Brewers starting rotation. They can't handle any more of these. And I think you and I were talking about this, maybe not on the pod, maybe not. And we're like, well, what version of Joe Ross are we like worried about losing? Because you never, like, injuries on their face are, they're just bad. But in terms of straight replacement value, the Brewers ended up being just fine.
Yes.
In fact, probably better because Tobias Myers came in the rotation. Joe Ross was moved to the bullpen where he was actually fairly effective, including in the playoffs. And it kind of ended up being this weird blessing in disguise in a weird way. And I'm not saying that's the same case with Garrett Mitchell because Blake Perkins is not here. You may have noticed that they moved him to the 60-day IL.
Yes.
So he's not going to be here till the end of May or early June anyway, which boy, oh boy, that timeline just kept getting never. When I'm sitting there and I tweet out or blue sky out what the Brewers initially say the timeline is, don't believe it. Or at least like take it with a grain of salt, maybe two, because it's not that they're necessarily wrong. It's just that this is the way that these things happen. Like, remember Justin Steele when he got hurt? Oh, no big deal. He said, it'll be fine. It'll be minimum stay. But a year out for the year, you need surgery. Like, that's just kind of the nature of these things. People, teams want to go all optimistic. And well, then Blake Perkins' fractured shin doesn't heal like it's supposed to. And he misses 6 more weeks than you initially thought. And that's just the human body. Not anyone's fault necessarily. But anyway, take the grains of salt. Where were we, JR? Garrett Mitchell.
Yeah. I mean, and Mitchell has been in this boat before too, where it's, well, it's not a big concern. And then 3 months go by.
It is. Yeah. Well, in oblique, I'm always concerned about an oblique. Tobias Myers getting back as fast as he did is
best case scenario.
And frankly, like he didn't actually, I don't think he actually like injured the oblique. He was throwing within like 5 days, 4 or 5 days of leaving that spring training start. He just had to redo the buildup process. Anyway, I'm not saying Garrett Mitchell is Joe Ross, because obviously there's way more upside in there, and we've even seen it this year. And defensively, actually, JR, Garrett Mitchell has been very, very good aside from that weird throw in San Francisco. He covers a lot of ground in center field, and he covers it very well.
He can do that.
Yeah.
Maybe Churio not to Garrett Mitchell level, but
I thought it was interesting that Churio got the start in center on Sunday. So I'm paying attention to that. Maybe it's an instance of they want to keep Sal and Wright.
But I don't know.
Also, in the past, they just played Sal in center and moved Churio to right. So
can Jackson Churio throw the ball? Because I know he has a good arm. What is going on there?
I don't think he does
have a good arm.
I think he has an average for left field arm, and it's not accurate.
No, and it's not accurate at all.
And that is part of the reason they moved him from shortstop to the outfield.
Sure.
You're fast. Yeah, that's weird. Have a great arm. Just go play center, kid. Makes a lot of sense.
And I mean, obviously he has the wheels to play a decent center field, but if he can't throw a guy, if they're going to run on him from shallow left, you know, right center, because they know they can't score on a sack fly.
Yeah. If you're looking at the opposing scouting report, it's a green. Yelich is obviously a green.
Of course.
Garrett Mitchell's maybe a yellow, and Sal is a yellow to green. So
they don't have good arms out there.
No, but I mean, we've talked about the difficulties in the outfield defense, but their whole point is they can cover ground.
Of course.
Anyway, Chair, roundabout way of saying the version of Garrett Mitchell that the Brewers were getting is not a particularly incredible player. However, because they don't have Blake Perkins, yes, it is concerning. They do have some decent options.
Yeah.
Like obviously Yelich, that's the strength of their team was the outfield, Yelich, Churio, Perkins, Mitchell, Frelick. But the more you have to play Jake Bowers in right field, and the more you have to play Daz Cameron, no offense to you. He mashed at AAA. I'll believe it when I see it in the big leagues.
Of course you will.
Slightly concerned, but then again, JR, I don't know how much more of the Garrett Mitchell 0-for-4. He just keeps getting fastballs at the top of the zone and swinging through it. I don't know how much more of that, like my brain or Pat Murphy's brain could realistically take.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about Pat Murphy a little bit before we get to 3-up, 3-down. He made a kind of an interesting move Saturday where he benched both Sal Frelick and Caleb Durbin for mistakes. Those were costly mistakes. Ultimately, in a game that was settled in the bottom of the ninth on a home run by Nolan Arenado, they were costly in a big way. Caleb Durbin picked off of second base down 4. He would have scored if the results had held, because there were some hits behind him. And then Sal Frelick missing a cutoff man. He said it wasn't like a mental mistake. He just sailed it. And that ended up allowing a runner to move up, who also later scored. Again, both of those runs looming large. I wonder what you think about benching players. And I mean, it's not typical at the big league level. And it usually, you know, Pat Murphy, of course, college sensibilities. Their screw ups are the reason that they didn't win the game. Right. Like, so I definitely understand it. I definitely feel it. And sometimes, you know, in the frustration of a little bit of a mini losing streak, you're kind of like, we have to send a message that like, play better, right? Like, just they had a big team meeting in San Francisco. You gotta just play better. So I don't mind it. It is unusual though, and I think it, you have to do it with the right players who don't take it personally. I think you wrote or Todd wrote. I mean, Pat Murphy does not hide his love for players specifically like Sal Frelick and Caleb Durbin. So this is definitely not a long-standing issue. He loves those guys. So what do you think about that? Do you think that is a strategy that can work, or does it just leave you with lesser players and then you wind up with less chance to win? Like, maybe that was the
so that's that is where I'm at in this. The Brewers took Sal Frelick, and as we talked about Caleb Durbin, out of the game, and especially Durbin, you ended up with Vinny Capra getting multiple important at-bats. And oftentimes when I questioned Pat Murphy's tactics or his like love for players, which is these players, it ends up blowing up in my face because Bryce Terang then ends up hitting 300 and Sal Frelick wins a gold glove. Yes. And so I do think Murph has like an innate baseball sense that obviously I do not, and most people do not. So we're not operating necessarily on the same wavelength here. I do respect it. If you think about the Braves, right? And that fiasco recently where Jared Kelnick, Waukesha's own.
That's right.
Kind of he had balled to the wall and pimped it, thinking he hit it out and got thrown out at second in a close game. Absolutely can't happen. And then Acuna's like, well, if it had been me, .. you know. And
yes.
Absolute fantastic point by Acuna. And I kind of sneaky love him doing it publicly. Some people are like, well, don't, if you had a problem, take it to Snit. And I'm like, no, the whole issue here is that there's a double standard for your best player. I'm fine with what he did. Anyway, Pat Murphy is calling out his favorite players. I think you could probably pick a bone sometimes with the favoritism that Murph, at least like vocally and with the media, shows for guys like Durbin. Think about the way, just the difference, that the different way that he's spoken about Durbin compared to someone like
Ortiz,
someone like Ortiz. Yeah, that's a great one. Jacob Mizorowski, Garrett Mitchell. He doesn't sing those guys' praise in the way he sings Durbin's praise and Terang's praise and Frelick's praise. And so that's always been an interesting thing, but that's a Murph thing. And so the first guys that he's ever benched as manager being
his
two
buddies.
Of the guys that he really buddies. Loves the way they play the game.
Yeah.
I do respect that. Absolutely. Maybe the message sent is more important than your chances at coming back from 5-1. Frankly, what I think was the undertone here is we're down 5-1. We're probably not going to win this game. Get out.
Sure. It's a good time. Yeah.
I think if it was tied, they maybe stay in there. And they ended up kind of pulling off a pretty impressive comeback that, frankly, like a couple balls bounced their way, they win that game. So those are my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think I'm certainly with you. And also, like, it's a rare concoction where those mistakes actually cost you the game, because they did. And it's been like that now for several games in a row where players make, you know, some of the mental mistakes. You know, Bryce Terang throwing, I think that was more of a poor throw home where he could have gotten a runner, and that, you know, allows a run to score in St. Louis. And just like, there's so many just.
Did that happen in St. Louis too?
Or did that happen in San Francisco? They run together for me too.
Was there a play at the play in San Francisco?
No, it was San Francisco. Tyler Fitzgerald is the guy who
he should have gone to first. He should have gone to first
for sure. So I don't know. I think I'm okay with it, honestly, but we'll see if there's an outcome that, you know, there's a benefit. All right, let's go. Let's move on here. We got to get into some of the more granular details of the week. Here we go. It's our segment every week. Three up, three down. Kurt, I'll start. Interesting game for Jackson Chourio on Saturday. Real interesting. He had, first of all, a four-hit day. He'd been slumping. He's been really struggling since he had a really nice showing in Arizona, but he breaks out of it. He has a really good day in St. Louis. Four hits, homers, down two outs to go before the Brewers end up losing the game 5-3. Homers off Ryan Helsley. Just a great, again, no doubt, beautiful swing that ties the game. It's a very brief victory because Nolan Arenado, two batters into the bottom half against Trevor McGill. We can talk about Trevor McGill. He's been struggling. But that home run, a no-doubter, that gives the Cardinals a win. Quite honestly, the Brewers had played poorly enough that day where it wasn't necessarily a stunning loss or anything. Like, they were lucky, I'd say, to be back in that game. But Chourio also called for interference on a play that loomed kind of large, running on a throw from first base to try to get him at second on a force play. He runs out of the baseline into the grass, gets hit with the ball. He, you know, had then moved on to third base, but was called out. That again, ended up looming a little bit large in a one run game. I think it was completely the right call from what I saw. The radio feed is what I was listening to at the time, and they were like, sure that nothing had happened. And then by the time, you know, they got to where the call is like, oh yeah, he's definitely out of the baseline. So I think that one was pretty safe, pretty normal, but you just don't see a lot of interference calls. I don't know if you feel differently about it, having seen it yourself.
No, I've resigned myself to not understand what is interference and what is not. Oh, the baseline is a social construct. You create the baseline yourself, but you also don't create the baseline yourself. I don't know.
Construct.
I don't get it.
I would say that if in the, even the social construct, he definitely weaved his way on a very unusual path. So I really think this one works, but it is definitely hard to know what is interference. When someone says interference or obstruction, I just assume the manager is going to argue, because I don't think anyone knows for sure what it is. Surprised Pat Murphy didn't get ejected, by the way. They let him talk.
There was multiple instances in San Francisco where I thought he was going to get ejected too. Monday night, the zone was
weird,
iffy in important times, I think. And they were barking. It was a younger guy behind the plate. I think Alex McKay was the one. And he apparently has a slow trigger, so good for him.
Yeah. What's your number one?
I'll pick it up with Brian Hudson. We kind of skipped over that.
Yeah, we did. What do you think? What do you make of him? What's next for him?
I'm concerned.
Okay.
I'm a little concerned. Yeah. It's so interesting with Hudson because he was so dominant last year for the whole time he was here, frankly, outside of what, a 2-week stretch in July. Mm-hmm. And he was so dominant that it's like, oh, well, what the things he does when he's doing it well clearly works very effectively. But it's also clear that what the Brewers are saying is the margins with you, pal, are very, very thin. Yeah. They did not have to call up Craig Yoho. I think we would have gone crazy, right? If Craig Yoho was still, he was throwing now, you know, 3 more innings at AAA this week and shoving.
Yeah.
But with Tobias Myers coming back, they could have kept the roster the same, brought up someone else for Logan Henderson for a few days or whatever, kept Logan Henderson around, whatever they want to do. The real roster move there was calling up Yoho and sending down Hudson. It wasn't the directly the same move, but those moves were intertwined. So clearly, I think the Brewers are sending a message that the margins for Brian Hudson are very thin, even when he's getting results. The stuff has dipped. The command is really, I think, the issue. And I don't know. I don't know if it's confidence thing or if, you know, there's fatigue there that's impacting him or what it is. But they need to see Brian Hudson get back to the version of Brian Hudson that works. Because, you know, like with a lot of pitchers, you can be sort of at your 80 to 90% in fine ways. It's more difficult out of the bullpen when you're operating with, like, I have 1 to 2 ways to get guys out. But a lot of guys can still do it. Nick Mears does it. Devin Williams, we got to get to him. Williams does it very well. And Brian Hudson has still gotten out, so I don't want to say he doesn't do it very well, but like I said, the Brewers are like, you got to be the best version of yourself. Otherwise, we have better versions of pitchers.
All right, my number two, Sal Frelick, because he was removed from that game on Saturday, lost his on-base streak. It stopped at 20 games.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it did. You know, I wonder how you feel about on-base streaks. I think you feel pretty positively about them because Scott Pesednik famously had a long one, and you are, if nothing else, a merchant of Scott Pesednik vibes. I'm surprised we don't really talk about them more. We so focus on the hitting streak, and I feel like hitting kind of is a bygone like necessity. I mean, it's still obviously it's important. But you know, just creating havoc in different ways, I think has been more embraced over the last several years. And I think it's pretty cool to have an on-base streak. I think that's something that that just goes under the radar. Like obviously if it were a 20 game hitting streak, it would be the talk of baseball. On-base streak is not going to rise to that level, you know, grading on a higher curve because guys have longer on-base streaks. But how do you feel about those?
I could care less about on-base streaks.
I thought that might be your answer. Yeah, I guess that's fair.
You could have a 90 game on-base streak. Doesn't matter to me. I'm ignoring it. Unless it's the team I cover, then I'll probably write about it. But mentally, I'm not caring. Hitting streaks are where it's at. I still love a good hitting streak. A guy gets to like, I think like the Brewers hype the guys up when they get to 10 on their social media. I'm not there. It's got to be, I think a dozen to 13 is where I start caring. Maybe if you make the leap to 13, then I'll start paying attention. But I love a good old fashioned hitting streak. I don't care so much about non-base streak.
I mean, we talked about how we prefer no hitters. Well, like everyone prefers a single player to throw a no hitter versus a group no hitter. Group no hitters just don't even like they just don't even register with me. One could have happened 3 days ago and I would have already forgotten about it, you know? So deep inside our analytical brains, Kurt, are still one of those like nostalgic old school baseball people who just like those things that have always been celebrated. So I agree with you. I agree that
fewer hit streaks.
Yeah. I mean, to get to 15 is actually, I know you said 10 isn't quite there for you yet, but you get to 15. That's like kind of a big deal. That's a high, that's one of the higher ones you'll see from a specific team in a given year. So anyway.
That's my turn. It's my go.
It is.
I think we're gonna save. We'll save the ex closer for maybe the next one for you or for me. Closer. Tobias Myers made his season debut on Thursday. We talked about it kind of briefly, but not really at all. And that's actually maybe befitting of the start. Just wasn't anything to talk about. The fact that he was only able to go 4 innings because he just wasn't crisp ended up actually burning the Brewers because they had to pitch Tyler Alexander in the eighth inning. And part of that, actually, this isn't even the Tobias Meyer start, so let's just keep going, keep rambling. They chose to pitch Grant Anderson in an 11-1 game two nights before in the seventh inning. Pat Murphy explained his logic. I didn't hate it. I actually kind of see it. Is that game, you don't want to put in, say, Brian Hudson, a reliever who he didn't trust first, and then Hudson gives up three runs, and there's a guy on base, and you're like, well, shoot, now we're like one double away from this being an actual ball game. And I can see that, but also, like, your win probability was, like, you weren't losing that game.
No.
Eventually,
Put in Brian Hudson.
I think Murph might have gotten a little sheepish from the four-run ninth innings leads that were dwindled down and was like, no, we're pitching Grant Anderson. And look, it ends up burning you, possibly, because Tyler Alexander was not good in that inning, and Grant Anderson, I trust a lot more in that spot. Anyway, Tobias Meyer's pitched. I have nothing to say about it, really. I'm interested to see his next few starts if he can correct some of the command issues, because it wasn't terrible, but it was clearly not right.
Yeah, I guess I was encouraged by it. I think I said that earlier on this episode. I thought it was good, because just to see him back, like, I didn't expect him to go seven innings. You know, I thought it was all right. You know, there was that home run by Chapman, I think, who made it 5-4.
That was off Uribe. Yeah,
it was. Yeah, I thought Uribe putting a little gasoline on that was tough, because he didn't have his best outing, and suddenly it was very tight. You know, I think Nick Mears and Abner Uribe have looked really good, but they both got put in some tough situations. And, well, actually, Nick Mears is the one who got put in tough situations. Abner had his own inning. You know, that definitely is a game the Brewers could have won. Again, Christian Yelich catches a ball. Tyler Alexander gets out of that inning with it still tied. So that's actually probably not what happens, but still. Okay, my number three, Devin Williams. He is out as closer, at least right now, for the New York Yankees. They go back to the guy who was the closer at the end of the year last year when they went to the World Series, that being Luke Weaver, who I believe has a 0.0 ERA. That is not what Devin Williams has. His ERA at the moment is 11, I think. What has he got? 10 earned runs in 8 innings. It's bad.
And he had a scoring change that saved him like 2 earned runs in not his most recent blown game, but his second most recent blown game. So a little more context.
That's bad. He's got 11.25 ERA. He's got a 2.375 whip. That is, again, we're talking 8 innings, but that's crazy. That's crazy. He, you know, like, that's back-to-back three run outings that has allowed him to get bounced from the closer's role. Remember, that outing against the Brewers could have been so much worse than it actually was to kick off the season.
Terang hit a ball like 110 right at a guy in center field.
That's right. He's just allowing everybody to get on base, you know, and clean innings are few and far between, as you might imagine. So I don't like it. It bums me out, because I think Devin was a very fun player here. He was excellent. I think he is still that good in there somewhere. Something is amiss. Inevitably, as this keeps going, it's going to be Pete Alonso broke Devin Williams. Maybe I am straw manning the heck out of that, and that's not actually going to happen. But I worry that's what's going to happen, because I just know he's a tremendous pitcher. And it is really tough to see him in this market get blown up like that. You know, I still think maybe the Brewers right now can't feel great about the return that they got in that trade. But certainly right now, the Brewers have gotten the better end of it, because it has been a nightmare for our guy, Devin.
Yeah. So I have two perspectives on this. One is that my first thought is, I don't think this would be happening in Milwaukee. I just don't think so. The second one, though, is this. Devin Williams is totally fine.
Okay.
I think this is just like nightmarish scenario for a relief pitcher. Literally the nightmare.
He's given up 3 runs in 3 separate occasions. That doesn't count the Brewers outing where he should have given up more.
Right.
You don't think that's enough of an alarm bell?
Well, the thing is, no one's whiffing on his pitches.
No one's
swinging. He's walking a ton more guys. So it's kind of that, like, it's a bit that guys are being more patient, but the reality is he's not getting chase as much. He's not getting whiff as much. He's throwing more in the zone, and he's not getting as much whiff. And so maybe there's some concern about the stuff in there. I still think the stuff is pretty dang good. And it's just that everything that's hit is finding a hole, and everyone that gets on base is coming around to score. There's nobody being stranded. There's no Jake Bowers making that diving play at first base. And suddenly your 10 game sample looks god awful. And I think that's what's happening to Devin. But the unfortunate thing is that it's happening in New York, and they just traded for him. And then the whole beard thing happened, and he was at the center of that. And so he's wearing the beard. And so it's funny to see Yankees fans when they're mad, they're like, shave, you don't deserve it.
Yankees fans are so entitled. They're so entitled. They're so bad. Shame. All right. What do you got? What's your number three to close us down?
I probably should have ended on that. Oh no. Eric Haas had a squeeze bunt. That was awesome. Oh, Eric Haas never plays because William Contreras won't let him play.
Maybe he should. He should actually let him get a breather.
This is a two-parter. Okay. Let's get William Contreras involved in this too. And Eric and William Contreras' physicality and his playing time involved in this as well. Eric Haas, yes, two-run squeeze bunt. It was a very good safety squeeze. Weird play at first. Ended up goes in right field. And Vinny Capra, I think he had walked, came all the way around from first to score. So that was pretty fun. That was like the epitome of Murph ball. And then the Brewers bullpen blew the game. So there's that. Anyway, let's move on to William Contreras after the game Wednesday night, where he exited briefly holding his side. We're like worried it's an oblique thing. Comes back out and catches. And I don't think it was the bottom half of that inning, but the bottom half of the next inning, Willie Adames hits a foul ball. That's not what we didn't talk about, actually. It's Willie Adames. Maybe we'll get to that.
His days have been a little as rough as Devin.
He had some interesting comments as well.
Yes, we did.
Can't believe we didn't touch on that.
Well, there's the take of the week to come.
There's a take of the week. I might have to scrap what I had. Anyway, foul ball. Apparently, it broke William Contreras' protective cup, he informed us after the game. And then he said, everything's still there. Have to see if it's just have to see if it still works, but it's all there.
What? Oh my God. I did not read about that one in the newspaper.
On the record.
Great.
I'm not sure it even made my story. I felt like I'm not doing that. I'm just going to say it from microbrew. Definitely the part about we have to see if it still works definitely did not make the story.
Oh my gosh. Great.
What's the follow-up to that? What do you mean, William? How are you going to check?
Well, congratulations, William, that you're in such good shape.
So he just plays every day. It's kind of crazy. And I think that the Brewers were on their really bad streak. Like, if they had won a couple games on this road trip that they didn't end up, like, the road trip had been going differently, Haas plays Sunday.
Yeah.
But I think Contreras is like, no, I'm in there. We suck right now. We got to win some games. Give me the lineup. We got an off day Monday. That's the kind of horse that he is.
Yeah. Brewers are beginning a Chicago corridor of their schedule. They'll be going to the south side of Chicago to play the White Sox. And then the Cubs will be waiting for them when we come back from that. Was that Friday, Saturday, Sunday? And Craig Counsell will get to hear another lusty round of boos from the fans, perhaps fans that were at the draft watching, watching Roger Goodell and booing him, booing the Bears, Chicago Bears. So a lot of opportunity for booing here this week for Wisconsin sports fans. Okay, let's go back in time. We've done the three up, three down. It is time for my weekly segment, Remember When. Kurt, speaking of Craig Counsell, he used to be manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. You may know this. And I was thinking about players getting benched. It doesn't happen that often, like I said, but in July of 2016, it sure did. Craig Counsell benched somebody. Benched a second baseman, speedy second baseman. Give me the name, Kurt. You recall who this was?
John VR.
Jonathan
VR. Noted philosopher. That's the game.
That's the game. That might be our longest running inside bit. The that's the game bit. Kurt Hoag is a intern in 2016 for MLB.com, if I recall correctly. Great year to be a Milwaukee Brewers orbit. It was a terrible year of Milwaukee Brewers baseball, but in July of 2016, Jonathan Villar was one of the bright spots, I think, of that season. But in late July, so kind of getting toward the trade deadline, he gets benched because first he's removed from a game against the Diamondbacks after he tried stealing third with two outs and the Brewers trailing 5-0 in the first inning. I don't know why that's so funny to me. It's like it just gets worse. And counsel with the line, I just think it's a good day for him to take a step back in general. Cold Craig Counsell. He had had a lot of adventures on the base paths. Now, he did lead the majors with 36 stolen bases, so you had to take the good with the bad. He'd also been caught a league-leading 12 times, including 4 times at third base. He'd made some other outs on the base paths. It did not help in this game. Not only did he get thrown out at third in a 5-0 game in the first inning, he also committed 2 errors to help the team go down 5-0. So it was not his best game. He had 17 on the season at that point. That led the National League. He was also tied for 9th or something. He was top 10 in strikeouts with 109. So again, very much what we're talking about. A player who is, you know, like half good, right? Like has very, very good skills in some areas and just nothing in the other half. You know, by the end, he had an 816 OPS at this point in the season and a 379 on base percentage, both very, very good marks. He took 4.3 pitches per plate appearance. So he was patient. He did everything they wanted him to do, except, you know, not make some crazy mistakes. He wound up leading the league with 62 stolen bases, but he also caught 18 times, 826 OPS, 369 on base percentage. You take those numbers. So it was an adventure. I have a stolen base counter bobblehead, as I'm sure many of you do, of Jonathan Villar that season. He was, or the next season in that case, he was traded in 2018 to Baltimore. Do you remember, Kurt? You probably do. Who the Brewers got back in that trade in 2018?
Scoop. There it is. Scoop. There it is.
Jonathan Scope, the grand slam against Madison Bumgarner, still one of my favorite moments from 2018, but he was mostly not good. It did not work out for the Brewers, the Jonathan Scope trade. In 2019, VR played all 162 games with Baltimore, 792 OPS. Looked like, oh boy, the Brewers made a mistake, but it's not really what happened. VR ended up seeing action with 8 teams over 10 years in the big leagues. I think he's still in the Mexican League. I think he's been there for 3 years now. Laguna, I want to say, in the Mexican League. I think he's still there in 2025. So he is still in baseball in some way, shape, or form, just not in the major leagues. Awesome. Interesting player, Jonathan Villar.
That's the game. I did cover the game. He got benched. I don't think Craig Counsell, I'm maybe speaking on behalf of him, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think there was a player he had less affinity for than Jonathan Villar. That quote is pretty dang cold, and I think that about summarizes it. It's like I'm not even mad. Like I don't even have it in me to be mad. Just go away.
Just go. Oh man, that's
very
funny.
Very relatable dad behavior there.
Yeah,
Jonathan Villar 2016 though was a hell of a drug, a hell of a time. The 2016 team, all vibes, man, all vibes. I was so blessed to be able to intern for the most fun, boring baseball team of all time. They were awesome. Keon Broxton, come back. We miss you. Keon Broxton, one of the best.
Now, is 2016 the year of the Caleb Durbin, or not Caleb Durbin, Caleb Gindel walk-off home run? Or
no,
the Sean
I think
Alton?
That was neither. Nope.
Okay.
The only walk-off hit in 2016, God, why do I know this, was Jonathan Villar. Actually, no, this is why I know this, because I became scared of Mike Matheny that night.
Oh,
because we walked into, I was covering the Cardinals that series, walk into his office for the post game, and the cameraman couldn't get the camera to operate.
Oh,
for their TV station, their broadcast. So we stood there for at least 90 seconds and Mike Matheny made it very clear that he was mad. And stared, angry face, stone face, like the chiseled jaw and cheeks, and like the frowns on the forehead that like aren't frowns; they look like they're in cement. It was that, and he just stared forward the whole time. And I was not the one he was staring at, but I was right there, and I was like, "Dear God, Mike Matheny, please never be mad at me."
You are right. The only walk-off win of the year, July 8th, Jonathan Villar delivers. The Brewers finished 73-89 that year. It's the last bad team that we've seen for the Milwaukee Brewers. Last truly bad team. They've been very good since then. Kurt, we're going to wrap this up. Let's close it down the way we do every single week, and that is with your take of the week. Here it is, Kurt Blanche.
Because we do need to talk about the Willie thing, at least maybe a little more context.
Everything that happens on Monday on these podcasts is just lost into a wormhole.
Gets forgotten about.
I completely forget about it.
I don't think this is the most important thing, and that's maybe what I'm getting at here.
Sure.
So for those that are not acquainted, we wrote about this week on JS Online. In our conversation with Willie Adames, I asked him a question. This was, we talked on Monday again. And I asked him a question just about when he realized that he was going to move on. Was it before the season started? Was it during the season? Was it after the season? And he said, well, they didn't call. It's like,
yeah, that's okay. Weird.
And I think he wanted to get it off his chest a little bit. I think there was a follow-up to it of like, well, were you surprised by that? And then he had more to say about, I thought they would at least call me. So I don't know the exact specifics of the negotiations. I think everyone, including Willie, knew he wasn't coming back because there had been negotiations over the years about Willie coming back and the Brewers paying him. Certainly not open market value, but not nothing, not less than six figures. Or wait, would that be six figures? No, nine figures. Jared was not less than six figures either.
It was not.
And no, the two sides ultimately couldn't reach an agreement. And so I do think Willie was probably a bit miffed by, you know, the Brewers not being ultra competitive in the bidding this offseason. He felt like maybe they would make some sort of push. The fans would want them to make some sort of push. So I get the frustration from him. But I'm also not sure the Brewers like didn't call. Maybe the offers weren't passed along to him. Maybe they weren't in the ballpark of what he was looking for. But I don't know. It paints an interesting picture that I'm not sure is entirely accurate of just of the relationship. I don't know about the negotiations, but of the relationship between the Brewers and the front office and Willie Adames. Not some sort of contentious thing. I just think it didn't work out, and that was kind of a bummer for Willie.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I might be misremembering this. He said something a few years ago about how they hadn't approached him to an extension, and we're not sure that was true either.
That was not correct, and which leads to another question in this. So this was in the winter warm of 23. Another question that I asked him, where it was about, hey, Willie, just like, what's your thought on extension here? Do you think it's possible? And this was after the big boon of shortstops that winter. Bogarts, I think, was that winter. Dansby Swanson might have been that winter. And his response was, well, we haven't had any discussions.
Right.
And that just wasn't true. I don't know if it was true to him. Like, he didn't feel like there was real discussions, or he hadn't had offers passed on to him. It's sort of like the way that these things work a lot of the time is these discussions aren't, it's not like official. I don't know. Like, if you play fantasy football or fantasy baseball, maybe even more, sometimes you'll just text your buddies with
what do you think?
Trade ideas. Yeah. And that's how it might be. Maybe it's more conceptual with the Brewers, the front office, and the agent, and it just doesn't go to Willie. I don't know. I do know that they had had discussions to that point and had discussions after that point. It didn't work out.
Sure.
So, but it does make the quotes more
saucy,
confusing and saucy, but definitely definitely saucy. Yeah.
Okay. Right now the Brewers, their immediate upcoming schedule involves, as I said, Chicago White Sox starting Tuesday, Chicago Cubs starting Friday. They come into the week one game below 500, trying to salvage the month and head into May. Kurt, that's gonna do it. I got my interview with Quinn Priester coming up. Any last thoughts before I send you away?
No, I'm gonna go watch some basketball.
Ah, the Bucks are still alive as we record this. We'll see how we're feeling on Monday morning as you're listening to this. That will do it for this edition of Microbrew. Now, cutting into my interview with Quinn Priester, one of the new members of the Brewers. Speaking of Packers Bears, which was on the menu this week because of the NFL draft, He's got some Packers family members, and he's a big Bears guy. So there's some tension there. There's some good stories there. I like talking about that part of it, as well as his you know, the fact that he's a new member of the team. So check out that interview here. Thank you for listening, everybody. We will catch you again next week. Bye bye.
My guest is Quinn Priester, new pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. You've seen him a couple times already. Things going very well in the early going, and as I do with all these interviews, I'm going to go back to the very beginning to start with, and that is your time in high school, obviously pretty close to the Wisconsin border in Illinois. Did you have any interaction? I know you're a Bears fan, so I'll tread lightly there. Did you have any interaction, though, with Wisconsin sports at all? Did you ever come across the border to play, you know, playing in any tournaments or anything like that? How was that when you were growing up?
Yeah, no, so I grew up, and I've come to Miller, or I went formerly Miller Park a few times to watch the Brewers.
Many of us still call it Miller Park, yeah. So it's totally fine.
Usually to play the Cubs, if I'm being honest. I know that might not
you
sound
were one of those
great,
people. But, you were one of those people.
It's always such a great place, great environment to watch a baseball game, and then also, you know, you mentioned it, and I'm, you know, hesitant to say it, but the Bears-Packers rivalry has always been, you know, really fun. It hasn't been as fun for
Bears
my
fans.
Side the past few years, and but yeah, so it's a great place to, you know, the fans are awesome, and
yeah.
And I've been exposed to them, you know, pretty much my whole life.
Have you been to any Packers Bears games, or have you been to one recently? Maybe is a better question.
I went to one. Maybe in 2022 or 2023.
Okay.
And that was when was it Christian? Who's the Christian Watkins? Right?
Christian Watson, yeah.
Christian Watson, sorry. But Christian Watson had two touchdowns.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, crushed our souls. So, yeah, I've been to that one. And then I know my mom got a chance to see one at Lambeau with my grandpa, who's a huge Packer fan.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, it's divided in your family. That's crazy.
Yeah, he was. He grew up in Milwaukee, so it's actually – he used to be a fan of the Milwaukee Braves.
Oh, my gosh.
Before
back in the
they
50s.
Went to
okay.
Atlanta. And so, yeah, he was a huge Packer fan. It was always fun, you know. And whenever they would play, we'd bet $5. And then if the Bears would win, he'd give me $5. But if the Packers would win, he would just say, hey, keep the $5 till next time. Because
nice.
Otherwise, I would have owed him a lot of money.
Yeah, no kidding. We like your grandpa. That's yeah. That's great. Is that how you have connections to Eagle River? Is that on that
oh,
side
yeah.
of the family?
Other side.
Other
my,
side,
my
okay.
Uncle GJ grew up going to Eagle River with his friends, I believe, since he was kind of 18 years old. And now he spends a good chunk of the summer up there. And it's beautiful up in the Northwoods.
Yeah.
I got a chance to see it a lot in 2020, and it's just an incredible place.
Yeah. So, yeah, like during COVID and stuff, you were able to hang out there, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so my understanding as far as football goes is you caught a touchdown in the state championship
yeah.
game. I don't know if you were a tight end or receiver. I'm imagining that. How big of a football I know was a possibility for you coming out of high school? Was it a serious possibility? I think Northwestern even said you could play both. So how did that work? How did that work out for you?
I think if it was something that I wanted to pursue, I would have gotten, you know, a chance at a smaller, you know, school to play. But the older I got, the more I kind of one was just kind of fell in love with baseball and wanted to just
sure.
see how good I could be, you know, from the baseball side, and also seeing how big those guys are on
yeah,
Saturdays
yeah, yeah.
and different things. You know, I just made the decision a little bit easier.
To be clear, you are not a small person, so you can probably hang.
I like to think that might just be confidence talking, but you know, it was fun to play high school and play with my buddies, and like you said, you know, we ended up winning a state championship my senior year, which is a great memory that I always have. You know, I learned a lot about just how to work through our coaches. You know, Coach Siebert, Coach Pasalia, Coach Ludwig.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm leaving people out. Coach Suds. Like, there's just so many guys who, like, really did help, you know, ingrain me with the work ethic that, you know, that I have now. And a lot of that is because, you know, football, and I owe them a lot.
Yeah. What does it mean to have been a first-round pick? I've asked this of other first-round picks. Was that an important designation to you? Was that a challenging designation at any point? How would you describe the journey of being a first-round pick for a Major League Baseball franchise?
It was, you know, an honor for sure to be selected that highly and be thought of that highly. You know, there's certainly a responsibility that comes with that, you know, and being a prospect almost like immediately. That's just kind of what happens, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure it does.
And so it's just, you know, ultimately, I guess I tried not to think about it too much. If when people meet me and they're surprised that I, you know, was, that makes me proud. But, you know, certainly it comes with some pressures of, you know, a lot of people think you're going to completely change a franchise or do something like that. And ultimately you're just out there trying to get better every day, just like everybody else. And I think, you know, going through the minor leagues, like you see just as many incredible late round picks as you do early.
For sure.
It's just the way baseball works. And it's about, you know, how guys get better every day and what they learn and more about the speed at how fast they can learn things. And so, yeah, like when you get to playing, it becomes less of a factor and the players don't really care. They want to take you deep, whether you're picked in the first round or the 40th, you know?
Yeah. How would you describe how your repertoire has changed since you became a member of the Red Sox last year? I know there, even in spring, there was talk of maybe adding a pitch or changing a pitch. How would you sort of describe the changes that you've undergone in the last year?
Yeah, I think, you know, we ended up getting rid of the four seam and went to the cutter, and that's been the biggest change and help with the left-handed attack. And then just slowly, you know, making improvements to everything else, you know, being more consistent with the sinker into locations and, you know, getting the curveball to the floor, you know, taking some vertical break off the slider, just making it, you know, a little bit more of a downer. And I just think that's just kind of naturally evolving, you know, as a pitcher and listening to what the hitter wants or the hitter doesn't want, really.
Sure.
And how they react to what I'm throwing.
How big of a deal was that last outing of last season with the Red Sox? You came up, it was one really good outing. Maybe it was nothing. Maybe it was just a blip on the radar. But I had to think maybe, you know, new organization, sort of reassert your confidence a little bit. How did it play a role for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's always great to get the opportunity to pitch in the big leagues, no matter what.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a pretty cool opportunity to pitch, you know, at Fenway Park.
For sure, yeah.
The history that's there and you know, wear the Red Sox uniform, even though it's short-lived, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say it wasn't an honor, but, you know, coming, the amount of things that I learned and got better at, you know, over there are only things that we're capitalizing on now that I'm here and closer to home and get to play for, you know, a team, you know, that I've always, you know, really respected playing with the Pirates and how well they do things and how, you know, all the details matter and now being close to home where, you know, a lot of my family, you know, have been Brewer fans and,
yeah,
you know, it's certainly, you know, an honor in a very different way and it's exciting and you know, just an absolute, you know, privilege.
You know, they're talking to Tobias Myers down there as we speak. In his first start with the Brewers, he gave up a homer on the first pitch he threw as a Brewer, as a big leaguer. It was a home run. And then he threw five scoreless innings. And that's exactly kind of what happened to you. When that homer goes out, I remember him saying something to the effect of, "I've been through a lot. I've, you know, like I've seen it all. One home run is not gonna change anything for me." How would you describe that first outing and kind of that first hiccup followed by a really successful, you know, debut as a Brewer?
That's just it. You know, get the next out. You know, these guys. You know, Doyle's a really good player.
Yeah, he is.
And at the end of the day, when you make mistakes, they're gonna make you pay. And you know, I think it was kind of one of those things where it's like, "Hey, all right, we got it out of the way now. Let's just focus on, you know, throwing the ball over the plate and competing with our stuff." So
yeah,
getting rid of that, getting that out of the way early, I think was kind of, you know, all right, like there's your one and now we go, and was able to put together, like you said, a good start there and gave us a chance. And that's just what I want to keep doing.
All right, last one. We've been workshopping priest puns. I'm not sure there's a good one out there. Have you heard any good ones that we could work with?
No, honestly, no. I haven't. Usually people are really simple with just like Q or QP.
Sure, yeah.
Obviously with Quintana on the staff, you know,
that is a challenge.
Having multiple Qs is a rare thing. But yeah, usually it's just priest, QP, right, or whatever. I wish I could help you.
All right, that's no problem. Sounds good. Quinn Priester, new pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you so much, sir.